That's my sex noise.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we are live at Convergence 2017. Our guest is Dr. Love, Laura Okogoski-Vrasper. We talk with her about facing death as an atheist.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Nick Glover.
Hey!
And Tim Wick.
Hey, hey, hey!
And we are here with our good friend, Dr. Laura Okogoski-Vrasper.
Hi. Hello.
And as you can hear, we are live at Convergence 2017! That's right. It is our fifth anniversary, and we are here recording live two amazing episodes. Also joining us at the table is Joseph Scrimshaw.
I am here. I exist.
He may talk during, but he doesn't have to.
Maybe.
It's his choice. So we are really excited to have everyone here. This is our fifth anniversary. We've been doing this for 5 years, never missed a week, and it is all thanks to you guys. Started at the bottom, and now we're at the top. So,
we are in the mid-range. We are in the largest programming room at Convergence,
yeah,
and we have filled approximately 2/3 of it.
And if you search for Geeks, W-I-T-H-O, we come up in a Google search. That's right. Dr. Laura is here with us, and I'm going to call her Dr. Love just because I really appreciate that. That's her initials, and also she's lovely. So, Dr. Laura Love.
This might be the longest break between guests because she was a guest on our 8th episode.
Is it 8 or number? I thought it was number 6.
I just looked it up and it was 8.
It was an even number for sure. And that's all that matters.
I'm under 10.
Yeah, yes. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How
excellent.
Are you?
I'm great. Thanks
for
joining.
Me back.
Yeah. So we reached out to you because you are here at Convergence for one, but also we love having our science guests. I mean, like we like to have guests who are, you know, versed in science and geeky things, and you were one of our favorite legit doctors.
Aw, thanks.
Because we talked about zombie fungus.
We did. You may remember
fungus that turns ants into zombies.
Yep. Because Dr. Laura is a mycologist. Yeah. So what else do you do for work right now?
So now for work, I specialize in bioterrorism preparedness.
Wow.
So
that sounds
you're
super
not
badass.
Dead, so I did my job.
What sorts of things do you do?
When you wake up in the morning, don't thank God, thank Laura.
Exactly.
What sorts of things do you do on a day-to-day basis for bioterrorism preparedness?
I find holes in plans, and I try to figure out how to fill those holes.
Very cool. That's super cool.
Sexy bioterrorism prevention.
Yeah. Do you do a lot of research, actual like lab research, or is it more academic, like trying to like look at, you know, like the data you get?
Actually, neither.
Oh.
So we think about mostly like, if something were to happen, are we ready for it? Mm-hmm. So what needs to be done? And there's a lot of moving parts when it comes to thinking about preparedness. And it's things like, you know, how well are we prepared with our infrastructure? Are we prepared with transport? How do we get medications to people if they've been exposed to a bioterrorism agent?
Jesus.
How fast do we have to do it? I mean, these are all things we know. We know what the agents are. They're fairly well studied. That are the ones that are most likely to be used. So we can predict how quickly we need to move. It's just making sure that everything is in place to make decisions on when we need to motivate or start mobilizing everything. And so that's what I kind of...
Do you work for the government?
I am a contractor for the government.
Yeah.
Because
so
how do we
without the leaks, I don't leak.
Are you
so how do we defend ourselves against fake bioterrorism?
That's the next panel.
Okay.
excellent. While we mention it, where can people see you next after this show, people who are here at Convergence?
Right here in Atrium 6, we're doing Fake Science in the News. This is the next panel.
Oh, exciting. Oh. That's a good
that's
one.
Great. It'll good, be good. Good audience for that. Yeah. Just keep your seats.
So, Dr. Love, does the government have its own, like, fast track postal situation? I mean, you're saying like get vaccines to people or get medications to people. Would you use like the post office or like DHL? Or like what would you, like are there guys whose job it is just to be on standby for that kind of
thing? It's like bicycle messengers, Molly. You have no idea how fast those guys are.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's called the Strategic National Stockpile. So it's a pile of drugs and vaccines that are somewhere stored.
Oh.
And it's just a matter of mobilizing them. And it's you know, do we do it? It just depends on where it is. And
are they being flooded as a result of global warming? I'm worried about that in general. A lot of things seem to be getting flooded because of global warming. And I'm worried about our drugs.
I don't actually know where they are.
Oh. So, yes.
And even if she did, I couldn't tell you.
Right? Yeah. She's not going to tell you, plebe. Come on.
I didn't ask where they were. I just asked if they were getting flooded.
Is it? So, I'm guessing there's a lot of like epidemiology involved in studying like how things would move, how they would spread, how they would be used most effectively as a weapon in large population zones, stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Neat.
Yeah, we think a lot.
Do you keep a copy of The Stand on a shelf at your desk, like just just to like make,
no,
just to,
I
just to make a point?
I always recommend The Hot Zone to people.
Oh, yeah.
That's always a good one if you want to, you know, be scared. We did Apocalyptic Plagues Thursday. I don't know if anybody was
here. Hold on. We did Apocalyptic Plagues Thursday. Sounds very terrifying to those of us. We don't
and
know
also,
you guys
kind
have
of 24 sexy.
Hours. You guys have 24 hours before you die.
Goddamn no, Captain Trips.
We're going to wait until after con and then you'll all kick it.
Oh, that's nice.
That's the new con crud this year.
So, Dr. Laura, what have you been up to since we talked to you last? It's been a while,
yeah. And you know, we had talked previously about kind of what things to talk about, and between episode apparently 8 and whatever
260 something, I don't know, it's a lot.
What are we at now? We're
260
like 10,142 recordings.
Yeah.
That sounds
so
right.
So between 8 and 10,142. I actually went through something that I feel like a lot of people, not a lot of people, but that other people go through as non-believers that I think is important to talk about. And I'm going to bring it down and a little notch.
That's all right. Yeah. Sorry, we're all here together.
Bring it down.
Get your tissues out.
Yeah, because everybody dying of a plague doesn't is super high.
We set the stage.
Yeah.
That one's fun to think about. This is not so much fun to think about.
No, I think about everyone dying a lot too.
So in 2014, I had a sore in my mouth on my tongue, and I was like, "Oh man, this is really annoying. I can't eat pineapple." Like that was the worst thing.
Yeah.
I thought it was, you know, a canker sore, and it wasn't healing. And I know from having my degrees in microbiology, immunology, and cancer biology, so I have a background in knowing cancer biology. I went in to the dentist. Dentist sent me to the oral surgeon. Oral surgeon did a biopsy. January 5th, 2015, I got diagnosed with, it was called squamous cell carcinoma of the tongue, and it was well-defined. By the way, well-defined is not something you want to hear when you hear a cancer diagnosis.
So what does well-defined mean for a squamous cell carcinoma?
It means it's advanced, fairly advanced. It is, there's no like, this is pre-cancer.
Like we can't just cut it out.
Well, they did.
Okay, but there's more to it.
Yeah, it's a lot more difficult to stage when it's well defined. It's at the point where it's on the border of becoming malignant and moving from the original point of origin to interior lymph nodes, and then for this particular cancer, it likes to go to the lungs.
Oh shit!
So, and it was an incredibly aggressive cancer type that without treatment, if I hadn't been diagnosed as early as I was, which was about 4 months in to the start of it. Would have, I probably would have been dead in about a year.
Jeez.
Wow. So it was super aggressive.
And that was 2 years ago.
More than two years ago now. And so I went to an oncologist. Actually, I went to about 4 oncologists. Mm-hmm. The first one was an ENT oncologist. One was a radiation oncologist. One was like a medical oncologist. They're the ones that do chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a nice team of doctors who did all the work basically for me to allow me to basically, and I use my air quotes, beat cancer. I didn't have to do a lot. I just was asleep the whole time. But they did remove part of my tongue. Luckily, they did not have to rebuild it. A lot of times people lose half of their tongue and then they rebuild it from your forearm, but I didn't have to go through that because I caught it early.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is I have, they also did a neck dissection, which is they, if you come up later, you can see it, and I'll describe it. It's under my, an open, they basically slice me open from under my left ear to about a third of the way to between my chin and my right ear.
Ah, the old Chicago smile.
Yeah. I was like, that is my Jack the Ripper scar.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they took out 41 lymph nodes.
Jesus.
Well. So I don't actually have lymph nodes in the, like, the side.
How
of my
many does neck. A does a normal neck
thousands.
Have? Thousands. Yeah. Okay.
Well,
okay.
The body has thousands.
Okay.
And eventually your lymph system kind of like rewires itself,
yeah.
so you can drain. But I do still have, like, you know, my excuse for now is that I have a double chin, and it's from
the lymph,
the lymph fluid can't. It's like my body's still training itself to drain it properly.
Do you have to like massage the lymph?
Yeah,
around?
I did at first. I don't anymore. It's not so bad anymore. But
when you get sick, is it like a? Because I know sometimes you get sick, these nodes, you know, like they pop a bit. And I wonder, is anything when you get like a cold, or is it more uncomfortable?
Yeah, it goes this way to the right side instead of the left side, and you can see it in my neck. Like my left side is a lot more hollow. Looking, and my right side is a little bit more full looking.
God, that's amazing. I'm just so happy that you are alive.
That explains why
with us.
I didn't recognize you at first.
Oh, sure. Yeah. You were used to the left side of her neck.
I was just like, she looks so different, and now I know why.
Tim just sees people's necks. That's his whole.
It's true.
Like, he does. It's like, my neck is up here. Like,
you lymph node looker, you.
Yeah.
As a non-believer, like, because I mean, an atheist, is that a label you use? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as an atheist, as a scientist, as someone with a cancer biology, you know, not just background, but also, you know, you're well versed in it. How did you deal with this?
You immediately started believing in God, right? Because that's what happened.
Because God saved you, clearly, and not
clearly.
Science. Yeah.
No, there's a universal, like, terror that happens between diagnosis and staging.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't fully staged until after my surgery.
How long was that?
That was almost 2 months.
Oh my God.
So there's this time where you're like, we don't know. It could be in your lymph nodes. It could be in your lungs. You could. And so I'll give you, and as a scientist, by the way, don't ever look up statistics when you're just diagnosed with cancer.
I'm seeing some knowing nods in the audience, some people who really feel this,
For a stage one tumor of my type, as long as it was still in the tongue and nowhere else, there's a 95% survival rate.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 5-year survival rate. If it got into my lymph nodes, that's a 50% 5-year survival rate. And if it was in my lungs, it was a 5% 5-year survival rate.
Whoa.
So, you know, for 2 months, I'm sitting there going, oh, fuck.
There's either a 5% chance I'll live or a 5% chance I'll die. Yay!
Yeah, I mean, it could be like, okay, and I just had to constantly convince myself, okay, I caught it really early because mm-hmm. I know that if you have a wound that doesn't heal, you go to the doctor.
Yes.
So I was like, my fingers are crossed, and they were talking about, like, radiation therapy. That's the thing that kills this one. Mm-hmm. And I'm not normally claustrophobic, but when you get into an MRI machine when you're in there for half an hour, you get a little claustrophobic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for radiation therapy, for something like this, they take a mold of your face, and then they make a mesh mask that goes over your face, and then they bolt your head to a table. And that's how they do the radiation therapy.
Oh my God.
For how long?
For sometimes, like, a half hour to an hour at a time. And I'm like, you better give me Valium if you are going to go.
Oh my God.
Bolting my head to a table.
Because
with a mesh mask over my face, like a Madam Mask or something crazy.
Yeah,
you're secured to the table by your face.
Yeah.
Sounds like cosplaying the Man in the Iron Mask or something.
Honestly, that was the thing that terrified me the most, was like the idea of my head being bolted to a table and having basically laser beams shot at my face.
Radioactively.
Yeah.
Beams,
basically like burning my face and burning my mouth. I mean, that's what they do.
But you didn't have to do this one.
I did not. Oh. I was very, very, very lucky that.
Well, thank God for that.
Yeah.
I always feel like whenever, especially with cancer, and I don't mean to make light of it, but I'm going to make light of it a little bit. I always feel like when people are describing how various cancer treatments work, like, it always sounds like we're 3/4 of the way into a superhero origin story.
Yeah.
Like, I was hoping.
First they bolted my face to a table, and then they bombarded me with radiation, and now I'm Iron Jaw. Like,
and I wrested my face from the table by my own power. Yeah.
I would have just had to channel my inner Wolverine and be like, they're putting adamantium on my skull, I swear, I'm just going
man.
What if there's adamantium on every lymph node?
The idea of an adamantium tongue, I don't know how I feel about that.
So, speaking of your tongue, how long was there a lot of physical therapy? How long did it take you to regain what you consider to be a normal diction, you know?
It was about a year. I mean, I'm still recovering. Mm-hmm. I've got some numbness still in my I couldn't feel my left ear really at all. Mm-hmm. It was really weird because it was like, poke. Yeah. I know it's there.
That's,
yeah. It exists, but I can't feel it.
Did the ear, I mean, you could hear out of it, you just couldn't feel it?
Yeah, my, like the...
So it didn't affect the inner ear, just the outer.
No, okay. Just my earlobe.
Skin. Damn.
And then everything above the scar, like from my chin to the scar, is there's still not a lot of feeling.
Yeah.
And then, of course, stupidly, I decided I'm going to learn the bagpipes, right? Like, like a year after my surgery.
Oh my God, I have cancer. I'm about to die. What's the one thing I want to make sure that I do before I die?
I like to think of it as more like, okay, if I can't make it, like for me at least, if I can't make annoying sounds with my tongue, I got it.
It was more like, if I've got to go down, everybody's coming getting with me.
Laura, this has nothing to do with our conversation, and we'll get back to it in a minute, but I would like to formally request that you record the Geeks Without God theme song on the bagpipe.
So
we can chase away listeners before they even make it through the intro.
We've only got 9 notes, but I'll see what we can do.
All right, thank you.
It's going to be like the first of the 7 trials of Hercules.
It's a pretty simple song. We wrote it at Convergence, and when we wrote it, Jeffrey was pretty drunk. So
weird. Yeah. What did you feel? So when you got diagnosed, I'm guessing that there are people in your life who are believers, or do you have anyone?
Not really.
Like,
no.
That's awesome. No, but I mean like it's rare.
Yeah, I know. I actually had some really interesting conversations with my mother, who's also. I actually warned her that because she listened to the first episode that I recorded with you guys. But I warned her that we would be talking about her on this episode.
Yeah.
Because my mom actually said to me, you know, I said to her, I'm like, you know, sometimes I feel like it would be easier to go through this believing in a God, just because I feel like, you know, if you, there's nothing you can do, right? This is all statistics. Mm-hmm. It's all like, there's nothing about my lifestyle that caused this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I asked the doctor, I'm like, is this something I did? And he's like, nope, we have no idea why you got this. So it was like
asymptomatic,
complete out of the blue. And I'm young, or I was young, young for a cancer survivor. I was actually considered a young adult with cancer. And I was like, what's the cutoff? And they're like, 40. And I'm like, sweet, because I was 38 at the time.
Sweet, I'm
right?
still young.
Yeah. Oh, that YA cancer is really popular.
Yeah,
young adult cancer. It's all about Katniss.
Silver lining. Yeah. All right.
But she, you know, she had said she's 77 now, and she had said, you know, I said, oh, it'd be easier to believe in God, right? Because then I could pray. I just don't believe that. I don't believe it does anything. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that, you know, that some being will hear me and save me from my cancer,
and
right? Like my team of doctors, my team of doctors are the ones that are going to do that, right?
Yeah.
So I was talking to my mom about it, and she said, when you're my age, it's kind of a relief to think that there's nothing after this.
I get that.
And at the time, Oliver Sacks wrote a really nice article for the New York Times on facing death. He was facing terminal illness. And I read that article, and I was like, the difference is he's 82.
Yeah.
He's 82. He's not 38 and basically still in school like me. Like, I haven't, you know, the thing I started thinking about.
You haven't had the opportunity to pay off that debt yet.
No, I'm still paying it.
I know. And you wouldn't have had the chance to do that. That would have opportunity that you missed.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But you know, there's this idea of legacy, right? And I started thinking kind of a lot about legacy. When have you done enough?
Mm-hmm.
And also, how do you, as somebody, and I was thinking about people younger than me, like 20 years old, that haven't even thought about their legacy and they're facing terminal illness.
Mm-hmm.
I was by no means terminal. I mean, I could have been during that time where I was like waiting. There was that idea of like, there's kind of a 50-50 shot that I'm terminal.
Terminal 2 months to wait, that's for sure.
So, you know, I was thinking like, how does somebody who's like 20 years old that doesn't believe in God face like their death?
Yeah.
And I was realizing that there's not a lot of resources out there for it.
Yeah.
The resources on facing death are either religious, where this is God's plan and all that stuff,
you'll go to heaven, so it's okay. Don't worry. It's just this is the reward that's coming doesn't compare to the pain you're suffering. Is
if
like
you pray
a,
to God, he might fix you, unless it's a part of his plan, in which case it's whatever.
I mean, but they're either geared towards, you know, religious people, or they're geared towards older people. We're like, you've left behind, you know, and there's a couple different types of legacies you can leave behind. One of them is like genetic or familial, where you have kids, right? I'm also a non-haver of kids.
High five. Sorry, that was for us.
You know, and I don't, you know, I do have a stepdaughter, so my husband is taking care of that for me. And you know, there's an amount of legacy I leave behind by helping to care for and raise her. But genetically,
and friends and everything. Yeah. You know,
Genetically, that I'm not leaving anything behind. And then there's like the idea of intellectual or creative legacy, like
publications.
I published a lot of papers.
I mean,
sadly,
you're very smart.
During my surgery, I had analyses running on my computer at home that I checked on every once in a while. So I was technically working the entire time I was undergoing all
of my course you
surgery.
Were. do you feel the need? Like, do you feel like you want to create those resources? Is that something you've thought about? Whether it's something, you know, as, you know, like a blog or writing a book or anything like that? Or garnering stories?
Not necessarily. And I think it's because there's a lot of people a lot smarter than me out there that think about this stuff a lot more. I mean, what it came down to is me going, I am not ready to die. Mm-hmm. I have not left my mark on this world yet, and I'm not ready to die. And it pissed me off. That I had to face that and freaked me out. Like, I was scared. I was straight up scared for, like, the more I thought, I was trying really hard not to think about it. But you think about it. That's all you think about. Because, of course, you have to go around telling everybody, right?
Yeah,
I have to go tell my boss, hi, I know I started working for you, like, 6 months ago, but I have to take some time off so I can fight my cancer. And, you know, calling my mom was really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And partially because about 4 years earlier, my dad had died of cancer. She faced that, and then 6 months later, my grandmother passed away, and so my mom had a really rough year with that. So I didn't really want to tell her. Like,
but at the same time, it's you're going through it too. You can't. You know, you need her, and she needs to know about you. And
she needed to know. And I'm just like, don't look anything up. Just don't. I know that's the first thing that she wants to do, because you know we're a science family. And everybody in my family, the first thing they do is start looking everything up.
Yeah, me too.
And it's the worst thing because. I mean, the paper's out. The thing that you do to make your science sound really important is talk about how horrible things are. Like, with people that have that, like,
I know.
So, like, you know, when you see a paper, like, oh, and somebody's diagnosed with, you know, squamous cell carcinoma of the tongue, it's like this horrible thing happens.
Yeah.
So, inevitably, it's terrifying.
I can't imagine. I mean, I can't imagine what you've gone through. I haven't gone through it, but at the same time, I am so grateful that you shared your story with us and that you came here. And I think that, you know, if there's one thing to take away, it's that don't ignore, right? Like anything health-wise, like go check out. Get it checked out. But
while you can,
Laura, thank you so much, Doctor. It's time for five questions.
Yay!
So, Doctor Love has answered our five questions before, and we have a new five questions though. I know you have not answered these, so let's...
You even missed a set of five questions. That's how long it's been.
That's how long it's been.
Yeah.
You know what? She's got a buy on those five. We'll go to the new ones. I think that's...
Yeah. We'll
Nick, do you have question one for us?
I don't.
I do.
Tim, I question do. One.
What conspiracy theory do you find the most interesting or compelling?
I personally, as a scientist, I really enjoy the idea that all the scientists seem to get together and to agree on what lies to tell the general public. That's my favorite one.
Somehow you all managed to do that.
Yeah, like there's a meeting.
That
an
is really
meeting.
Nefarious. It's amazing.
It's like an email chain. There's just a big email chain with all the scientists.
Yeah. Exactly.
forward. Tomorrow we press vaccines.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Nick, question two.
Question two. What is your perfect 2-week vacation? Money's no object, but physics is.
I'm such a nerd about this. I mean, surprise, I'm a nerd. I really like going to botanical gardens. Like, I think I've been to botanical gardens pretty much everywhere I've gone. And the favorite ones that I have are in Hawaii. So I would definitely take my time, go to Hawaii, visit some botanical gardens, and island hop.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
So which island are the botanical gardens on?
There's a bunch of them on Oahu. There's like three or four of them on Oahu.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Yeah, cool. There's some really cool ones that have like the tropical plants with super big leaves on.
Oh, I love those things. Yeah.
Like, you know, weird, like kind of like dinosaur plants.
Yeah. Like the really short little palms that are like dinosaur palms. Yeah.
Totally. That's
really great. Cool.
Question number three. What's a movie that changed your life?
So I thought about this a bit, and then I'd have to go with Aliens. Growing up, I'd always kind of been exposed a little bit to more fantasy than sci-fi stuff, and it was the first real like sci-fi that I sat down and watched, and I was like, oh shit, it can be like this. And, and since then, I was hooked.
That's awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
That's great.
So, awesome.
Tim, okay. Question four.
Number four, what is the geekiest thing you have ever done or said?
Well, I've given a little hint of this. I joined a marching band as an adult.
Is that...
Oh, that's great.
Is that a bagpipe marching band?
It is. I actually play the Highland snare drum in that particular bagpipe band right now. And hopefully
it's a Highland snare drum different than a regular snare drum?
It is,
of course it is. That's exciting.
Jesus, Molly, I knew that.
I was in choir. Nick, question five.
And our last one, which is especially relevant here for Convergence, for some of us. What is your favorite hangover cure?
Like Tim, I don't drink.
Hey!
Yeah,
That's the best one.
She's high five. He's
high five across Joseph. There we go.
Thanks, Asian genetics, for not allowing me to drink without serious consequences.
Nick's brother's the same way. He gets super flushed. Yeah. He is not a fan.
And then violently ill. It's super fun.
Fun. Hey, speaking of violently ill, we're at Convergence 2017. And let's give a big round of applause for Dr. Laura Okagaki-Vrasper. Thank you so much. All right. Dr. Laura, where can we, is there anywhere we can find you on Twitter or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, but I don't post anything there.
Yeah. Fuck you guys. You get to see nothing.
I come to this.
We're going to totally tag her when we post this episode on Twitter, and she won't even notice.
Guys, thank you so much for being here with us live at Convergence 2017. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. If you'd like, you can subscribe to us on Patreon. We actually have a new Patreon subscriber to announce. Matt Savakul has pledged and joined the ranks of the Patreon subscribers. Thank you so much, Matt. That could be you. If you do it right now, I'll get an email and we can announce it before the next episode. But thank you guys so much. We love being here. It's been our 5-year anniversary. Thanks to Dr. Laura. Thanks, Tim and Nick and everybody. And we'll see you in like 2 seconds. So bye.
We look forward to having Laura back sometime in another 250 episodes.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God.
Social media!
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
And what I just want everybody here to understand is that is literally impossible for Nick and Molly and I to do.